It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It was 60 years ago this week that five employees at the Westinghouse Electric East Pittsburgh plant were fired as, quote, undesirable, end quote, following hearings in Washington by Senator Joseph McCarthy's investigation subcommittee. Beginning in 1950, McCarthy became the most visible public face of a time in which Cold War tensions fueled fears of widespread communist subversion. McCarthy made claims that there were large numbers of communists and Soviet Union spies and sympathizers inside the United States, inside the federal government, and in private business. Ultimately, his tactics and inability to substantiate his claims led him to be censured by the U.S. Senate, but not before he had damaged the lives and careers of many citizens, including the five workers at Westinghouse. I'm joined now by phone by Pittsburgh historian and author Charles McCollister. Thanks for being with us again. How are you?
Good to be here, Paul.
How did this happen? McCarthy, as I mentioned, was censored by the U.S. Senate in 1954, and yet here it was now 1955, and these workers ended up being fired.
Right. Well, he was censored, but the committee still operated, and he was censored in December, so it was just shortly before this. So things were in the works, and there was definitely collusion between Westinghouse and the committee, because the day that these people were to come to Washington to testify, they also received notices from Westinghouse that they were fired. So, and as it turned out, three of them never even talked to the committee. Two of them were sick in the hospital, and they were fired. Two of them appeared to the committee and took the Fifth Amendment, and they were fired. And the sixth confessed that he had been a communist, and he was the only one to retain his job. But this really was the end of a long series of struggle over the issue of communism in the Turtle Creek Valley that really began back in 1941 and had reached its peak in 1948 to 1950.
And was there some sort of a historical link between the labor unions and communism, or you know, those who were looking into aspects of socialism and saying that we need more rights for workers and for average people in the United States?
Well, certainly. And certainly in the Depression, probably the high point of the Communist Party's power came in the mid-30s. It was definitely disrupted, the party's credibility, by the Hitler-Stalin Pact in 39, and then jumping in after having opposed Roosevelt's war preparations in 1941, once Soviet Russia was attacked, the Communist Party took a complete 180-degree turn and began to advocate for the United States' entry into the war. That period there had a really devastating impact on the Communist Party's strength in western Pennsylvania, but it still was a significant factor. Steve Nelson, who was the chair of the Communist Party in western Pennsylvania in the late 40s, estimated there were about 100 communists in the Turtle Creek Valley. However, many of them were union leaders, and most of them were very good rank-and-file, honest leaders who were attracted to the anti-capitalist analysis of communism, but had absolutely no relationship with Soviet Russia, or many of them were veterans, and they were certainly not subversives.
And so there was certainly an aspect of fear that existed then. Is that what led people to associate communists with people, just to automatically assume that they were people who were looking to overthrow the government?
Well, I mean, it came to a real head in 1948, because Phil Murray, who was the head of the CIO and a Pittsburgher, had resisted pressure from a lot of people, including his very close ally and friend, Father Charles Owen Rice. But when the Communist Party endorsed, because Stalin was pushing that after the war there should be militant action against capitalism all over the world, they endorsed a progressive party split from the Democratic Party, and chose Henry Wallace as their presidential candidate, and this was widely seen as going to defeat Truman, who was already divided on his right by the Dixiecrats in the South, who ran a separate candidate, and then with the left challenging also, it was almost certain, it seemed, that Thomas Dewey, the Republican, would win, and Republicans would control the Congress and control the presidency and take on a attack on labor, which had started in 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act. And that was the tool, because it said that one of the key elements of the Taft-Hartley was that you had to sign, if you were a union leader, you had to sign a non-communist affidavit. And that was then initially resisted by everybody, but under the terrific pressure of the Cold War, with China going communist, the Russians dropping an atomic bomb, and of course then Korea, the labor movement, Murray, decided that they had to purge the communists themselves or they would be destroyed. So that's basically, and it was incredibly bitter, and particularly at the Westinghouse plant in East Pittsburgh.
And I think a question that is at the core of this story would be, were these workers, these five Westinghouse workers who lost their jobs during this first week in January in 1955, this is the 60th anniversary, were they given due process?
Oh, absolutely not. They weren't. They were fired before they even had an attempt to comply with the subpoena. So, and two of them, one of them was in the hospital, and the other one was definitely sick. So, absolutely not. It was used simply as a tool to strike fear into people's hearts in the labor movement. There had been a highly contentious election in 1949 at the Westinghouse plant. The first election ended with each side within 100 votes of each other, and 150 voted no union. So there was like 6,000 on each side. And they had to run a separate second election, which took off the no union option, and the IUE, the CIO-sponsored anti-communist union, won that second election. So from 1950 on, the IUE ran the plant, but there was a very strong UE, or left-wing, organization still in the plant.
We have just a little less than a minute left.
Sure.
What became of the workers? What happened to them after they were fired?
Well, there were just a small part of many hundreds who were fired in Pittsburgh for left-wing activities, and very few of them without any due process at all. And many of them had a very tragic time finding employment at all after that.
And so ultimately the lessons of this that we take from this piece of history are what?
Well, I think one has to look skeptically have to look at issues like free speech, which they certainly had, and also that when mass movements of hysteria attacking people for their beliefs have to be looked at extremely carefully.
Charles McAllister is a Pittsburgh historian and author, joining us by phone to talk about this 60th anniversary, 60 years ago this week, that five employees at the Westinghouse Electric East Pittsburgh plant were fired as, quote, undesirable following hearings in Washington by Senator Joseph McCarthy's Investigations Subcommittee. Mr. McAllister, we know that you've been a little under the weather this week,
right?
So thank you for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. And we welcome your comments and story ideas at ESSPGH@WESA.FM. Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, a Pitt professor and Ukraine native talks about seeking change for his country amid economic issues and conflicts with Russia. That's tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.